Joining IC Change today is Ben Cook with the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies. Ben studies climate change's impacts on plant communities and water supplies. Thanks for joining us today, Ben.
Thank you for having me.
So you just published a study yesterday talking about how science is underestimating how climate change is affecting ecosystems. It's a very interesting paper. Do you mind just telling us about what you've been finding?
Sure. And this was a large-scale comparison between warming experiments and observations of species changes over the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years. What we wanted to do was to try to see if these experiments that we're designing to act as analogs for future climate change, are the responses we're seeing in the experiments analogous to what we see in the real world? And what we found is that they're not. And in fact, the experiments are significantly underpredicting the sensitivity of species to warming.
Can you go into a little bit more detail about the differences you're seeing in the real world and the differences you're seeing in these controlled experiments?
So what we're seeing in the observations is that for, on average, about every degree of warming, plants are flowering earlier or leafing out earlier by about 5 to 6 days per degree Celsius. In the experiments, it's much, much less, about 8 times less for flowering compared to the observations. And so we're seeing this really strong divergence and a really strong sensitivity in the observations, a really strong response of the species to warming in the observations, and a very muted or small response in the actual experiments.
And how did you feel as a scientist when you saw the difference?
We were really surprised. I mean, we went into this without having any real preconceived ideas of what to expect. But the one thing that we were really surprised by was how different the experiments and the observations actually were.
I mean, does this throw off decades worth of research?
It doesn't throw off research, but I think it provides some information that we need to think about. Because up to this point, there's sort of been the de facto assumption that these experiments that we're doing are acting as really good, appropriate analogs for the real world. But what our study is showing is that there's probably some other things going on that make it difficult to take a lot of these experiments just at face value. And our research suggests that, you know, we need to be a little bit more careful about how we design these experiments. Oftentimes, we'll use these experiments as analogs for the future. And so the idea of them being an analog for the future, you know, requires them to actually be representative of the real world. What this sort of shows is that this is not the case, and these experiments might actually be grossly under-predicting the sensitivity of species and ecosystems to climate change. Now, whether or not a given species is very sensitive or not sensitive at all to climate is not necessarily good or bad, but if you want to understand how species will change into the future, how their interactions with other species will change, and how their fitness, how their survivability will change, you need to know how sensitive they actually are.
So your research shows that, you know, these controlled experiments are not as accurate as phenomena in the real world. Do you believe that the science community will be increasingly looking for citizen science observers to help them figure out these new spring timings?
I think so, and I think that's something that a lot of scientists have really latched on to the last few years. You know, these long-term phenological data sets are really some of the best ecological data sets that we have, and almost entirely they come from citizen science observers who, you know, are amateur naturalists, hikers, you know, horticulturalists, whatever, who just are really interested in spring and flowers and, you know, all those sorts of natural events. So in the last few years, we've seen really an explosion of effort by the scientific community and a recognition that this is an untapped resource that we can use to gather new data and define data that's already existing. This is sort of, you know, scientific crowdsourcing, you know, engaging with communities outside of academia, people who are interested in this stuff and have a lot to offer as experts in their own local areas.
So the citizens of the North Fork Valley and the Western Slope, we're asking them to participate and provide observations. Can you give them any tips about how to make observations and help scientists figure out the climate change puzzle?
I mean, the two most important things are probably consistency and details. You know, if you want to make scientifically accurate observations, then you should have some sort of consistency on where you go, the time of day you go, how often you go to make these observations. So, you know, for example, one good thing to do is to, you know, always go on the same trail, you know, at roughly the same time of day, you know, maybe every couple of days, you know, during the time period where you want to observe this event. What that helps to do is reduce any sort of biases related to the actual observer. The second thing is just details. I mean, science and data sets that are the most valuable are the ones that have a lot of details about, you know, what you saw, when you saw it, where you saw it, which way were you looking, what was the weather like. All these sort of things can help us interpret things better.
So basically, people who walk their dogs every day at the same time, or who enjoy running or hiking at the same time, perhaps gardeners who are out in their yards observing things and planting things every day, the people who are kind of in a daily routine.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the thing that people should realize is that, you know, they're going to be the experts in their own local environment and the places that they're most familiar with. And so, you know, I think scientists, and, you know, I think we're really recognizing this now, you know, we can really get a lot of very useful information from people who are, you know, taking these observations, you know, walking the same places every day, and they really have a lot of offer and a lot to contribute to the science.
There is a note in your study with regards to earlier springs and the use of water going forward and how it affects the growing season. Do you mind telling us a little bit about how earlier springs affect water supplies?
Sure. So, you know, if you have an earlier spring, in other words, plants are out there, they're flowering, they put out their leaves earlier, they're going to start to draw down soil moisture earlier in the year. What this can often mean then is that in years that you have a very early spring, you can have a drier late summer because all that moisture has been used up by the plants earlier. And what this means is that oftentimes, even when you're having an earlier start to the spring, you can even have an early start to the fall because now the plants have used up the available water and they're starting to senesce and go dormant because they're water stressed.
So then in early fall this year could be triggered not because there's less light, but because there's not enough water?
Potentially. I mean, you know, this all depends on how much rain you wind up getting, but, you know, we've seen quite a few different areas that, you know, oftentimes, all else being equal, if the plants start photosynthesizing earlier, then oftentimes they'll start dropping leaves a little bit earlier because they start to get drought stressed towards the end of the summer.
Does this mean that there's net loss of water in the entire system, or that the entire system has just been put on fast forward?
It's more the entire system's been put on fast forward. I mean, you know, plants are going to, you know, have certain water requirements for photosynthesizing and producing fruit. And if it does rain less, then you would have less water available. But again, assuming that your water supplies are the same, you're just really shifting the entire rhythm of the summer to be earlier.
According to the Weather Service, Colorado has had the driest March on record in its history. And typically this is a month where the state gets most of its rain. Our water levels in March are low. Our snowpack is low. We're going into a summer pretty dry with an earlier spring. What do you think might happen?
Yeah, I mean, again, assuming, you know, nothing crazy happening with precipitation, you know, during the summer, is that, you know, I would expect that, you know, you're going to have because you have an early start to the spring and less water to begin with, you know, you're probably going to see drought stress among the plants start to emerge, you know, in the late summer, you know, indicative of the fact that they started using the water earlier and the fact that there was less water. So you might see leaves dropping earlier. You might see wilting of plants. It could be a variety of things reflective of this moisture stress.
This is going to be pretty stressful on the community of farmers and gardeners and people who depend on water supplies throughout the summer. Do you have any advice for them now as we move into summer?
Gardeners know what their plants need, and farmers know what their plants need, certainly more than I do. the only advice I can offer is that, anticipate this moisture stress that's going to come and plan accordingly.
This is a pretty unusual year in terms of weather and climate. Are there any observations that the community can make this summer that would be of use for climate scientists?
I mean, really anything. I mean, one of the really interesting things about really anomalous years like this year is it could potentially provide us a window into what, warm springs might look like in 50 to 100 years. And so, we're always looking for observations across the board related to ecosystems responding, related to hydrology, things like stream flow, soil moisture, really any data that's available can all be useful to try to understand, how this very anomalous winter spring is going to affect ecosystems and species.
That's actually the nature of the IC Change project. We're documenting seasonal and environmental change for a year to try and create a year-long record of how people are being affected, how they feel, how their lives are being affected by all of these seasonal and environmental changes. And we'll be speaking with scientists like yourself all year round. So thank you so much. And we look forward to continuing the conversation. If the community has questions, we may very well put you in touch.
Yeah, well, thank you. And, if you have any follow-up questions, please just let me know.